And it hits me, oh my gosh, this is that triangle.
You know, there's explanation for everything that occurred in the Rendlesham Forest incident that doesn't involve aliens at all.
It was completely silent. It comes right over our heads.
He saw a classic flying saucer, really, standing in a clearing.
He turned over to my father and held his hand, and he looked in his eyes and he said, "We're not alone."
Welcome to Podcast UFO for our live show. During the show, feel free to participate live in our chat room. And don't forget to like us on our very active Facebook page.
Hello, and welcome to the show. I'm Martin Willis, your host. And I think everything's working. I can't believe it. Wow. Last week, I thought it was just me. YouTube was not working. And then I found out Richard Dolan couldn't get on. Also, he couldn't stream. And it was happening to everyone. Well, now it's working. Hooray! And we have an interesting show. I like to do, as you people that have followed me for the last 8 years that I've been doing this show, I like to do shows with people that are not known. They're not on a lot of shows. Actually, this is this gentleman's first show. And I told him not to be nervous. And I just like to get different takes on this subject. He is someone very interested in this topic. He's in the UK, and he's staying up late for us. And I do want to thank everyone that supports the show. Anyone can do that. You can jump over to podcastufo.com, see all that information there. There was plenty of blogs. We don't have a new blog this week, but we usually do. They'll be back next week. There's plenty of blogs to read. Also, you can check out our Facebook page. And our guest is Jay Matthews. Again, he's in the UK. He's got a great Facebook page about UFOs in the UK, and we're going to be talking about that and how he got into it and all that stuff. But for now, we have Mr. Rojas that just made it.
Hello, hello.
Hello. Welcome to the show, Alejandro.
Thank you, sir. Yeah. Happy to be here.
Yes. So what's going on in the UFO world?
Yeah, so there's a lot going on. Of course, probably the biggest news is the president talking about UFOs, essentially saying he was briefed, he had a short meeting, and he said he doesn't believe in UFOs, but he did say when prompted, you know, that I'm leaving it up to the Navy pilot. So he's obviously aware that these Navy pilots have had sightings.
Yeah.
And I actually have seen episode 4 of Unidentified, and it goes over some of this, so we get to see some of, you know, how at least it came about, where these guys have gotten to talk to some of the lawmakers in DC and important people. In fact, I just interviewed Anthony LaPay, one of the executive producers, and he says, you know, I can't go into details, but he's absolutely certain that we certainly had something to do with this information getting to the president, which is pretty exciting, because they definitely had the information, were responsible for the information getting to the Navy, causing them to kind of change their stance and take the phenomena more seriously. That has gotten up now to the president. It's pretty exciting. I mean, the changes that we've gone through as far as perception of this phenomenon is phenomenal.
It really is. And there's the part that he said that, you know, if there's something to this, you know, he's going to let us know. That's what he says. That's what he says now. We'll just watch for that tweet, I guess, huh?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's what others are referred to as a big tweet. Oh, they just told me there's aliens out there.
Yeah,
so
before anyone can stop them. Yeah, maybe
I'll
do that.
We'll see.
Yeah,
it's interesting. I mean, that briefing got that high, but what is included in that I think would be pretty interesting.
What's that? What do you mean?
The details.
Oh, the details. Yes, that would be.
As to what was shared with him.
Yeah, yeah. Yep. And according to Chris Mellon, when I had him on, whatever that was a couple of years ago, that if the president asks for something and the government knows, they have to tell him. You know, they will tell him no matter what it is. And he said, you know, the way around that is to get something out into, like, the private sector to get something in the private sector and keep it quiet that way. But otherwise, if it's, you know.
Yeah, we've talked to Nick Pope about that. And because, of course, he worked for the Ministry of Defense along these lines. And the private sector organizations such as Bigelow or Lockheed or Boeing, they are not subject to FOIA or the Freedom of Information Act. So they don't have to reveal.
Or congressional.
Information they have or talk to Congress. Yep, Chris Mellon said, you know, the there are 8 Congress people who can request information and get it theoretically. I believe he was talking about the Gang of Eight, the Defense Intelligence 8. So these are essentially the people who run the parties and the Senate and the House and the intelligence committees. But he says they haven't really bothered to ask. And some people may think that's mysterious, but not so much. I mean, this is politics. There's twofold why people wouldn't want to ask. One, they trust that, you know, whatever should be getting done is getting done in those arenas, and they'll be informed should they need to have information, or even, you know, if there should be decisions made that they think they need to make. And two, is that they don't want to know. If they ask the questions, then they're subject to being asked by the media what they know or having to address the topic. And many of them don't want to address the topic. They don't want to be the UFO person on the Hill. So that may change, though, yeah, with more and more information coming out. And I think we will hear more about individuals. The other problem, I think, you know, I know you wanted to get into this a bit, and I guess it would fit at this point, is that there are these alleged leaked documents that are out. In fact, one of them out there people are purporting as a smoking gun. I personally don't feel that's the case whatsoever. The problem with these documents is that, and this is where it relates, is the individuals cited in those documents who are high-level military officials have denied having anything to do with it. They say, no, that's BS. It's all made up.
And I'm sure the conspiracy of that is being thrown back as, of course he's going to say that, right?
Well, but the problem is then you can't verify whether the documents are real or not or any of the information in it. So that's the whole point is, you know, we get these documents and we've gotten them over the years. But we haven't been able to verify any of this information. And these documents say varying different wild stories from something simple to, you know, crashed aliens with bodies and all of this sort of thing. But without verification, it really doesn't serve us any good. It certainly isn't a smoking gun. What we need to do is start to get people on the record. And that's what's exciting about this time. We are getting people on the record. We're getting the Navy on the record. We're getting
pilots
on the record.
Yeah. But not about
but without getting people on the record, you know, you have the instance where, for instance, officials may have information, but they'll deny it. What we need to do is compel them. And Luis Elizondo and Chris Mellon and others have said this, that what they need to do is the work to get rid of the stigma around this bill and then compel these people in the know to share their information officially on the record. That's the smoking gun.
I agree with you. You know, I mean, I look through the document and the two document or however many documents there are, the notes and all that. And, you know, it could be just someone creative. The MJ-12 letters, a lot of that, I think, is, you know, kind of along the same line. There's been a lot of very creative people with too much time in their hands. And this could just be another case.
And even if they're real, without being able to verify that any of it's real, then there's nothing you can do with it. Then all you've got is this piece of paper. So the job is not. I think that some of this stuff is always interesting to look at, and it helps you give you leads for research and things to investigate. But the papers alone don't really give you much, unless someone can get some verification for something on there. And so far, there's been zero verification. And like I said, both of the main players on the document have come forward and said those conversations never happened. I never looked into those things. They're BS.
Yeah. Yeah. So what else is happening?
Otherwise, let's see.
You want to talk? Why don't we take
the front page of Open Mindset TV? Go ahead.
Let's talk quickly about your UFO Congress is coming up. Let's let you give a little plug for that. That's coming up in September. And okay. Why don't you talk about some of the guests? I know James Fox just signed on. He's going to be there.
That is really exciting. James Fox has not been talking about his project that much. I think you and I have had some interviews with mm-hmm. Lee Spiegel, who's been helping him with the project. Otherwise, not a lot of people have been talking to these guys because they've been pretty hush-hush about it. But I know because I keep in touch with these guys. In fact, I've helped them a little bit with the production that – not only they've gotten interviews with everybody you would want them to get interviews with, and the people backing the document, people are going to be shocked when they find out who it was that put up the money to get this documentary done.
So we both know that little secret, don't we? Wow.
So it's very exciting stuff. So James is going to be at the conference, and he's going to be promoting it because he's going to be revealing when his documentary is coming out. He'll be revealing the name of the documentary, which we still don't know. Their first idea was 701, representing the 701 unknown cases in the Blue Book files. But that name turned out to be too enigmatic. It didn't make sense. So they dumped that name. And I don't know that they've even settled on a new one yet. So James Fox is going to be a lot of fun.
No, they settled on a new one. It's called Lee disclosed it last time he was on a few weeks ago.
Oh, he did.
It's called The Phenomenon, I do believe. I'm going to see if I can catch him on text, but I'm pretty sure that's what it's called now. The Phenomenon.
So, interesting. So there we go. We'll see. We'll have George Knapp, who's in the middle of all of this. He's been breaking the most news regarding all of this. He's been under attack. It's so crazy. I mean, there are people who are just so against To the Stars and all of this. Some people speculate, what are they paid off? Because they're just so upset about everything. They've been bashing George Knapp. But George Knapp is a great journalist. He just won another regional Emmy like last week. I mean, this guy has so many awards. It's ridiculous.
Amazing.
Because he's a great journalist. Otherwise, we're going to have Carolyn Corey. I think you've had her on your show.
Yeah.
Chase Kletsky, who's well-known. Jeremy will be there to share his two films and put them in the film festival, but he's also going to be sharing some new films that no one has seen yet. So that's exciting. And then we're going to have Richard Dolan and his wife, Tracy Garbett. And what's exciting about Tracy, and people might not know this about his wife, she actually is a remote viewer. And is trained in this. And I think she's even done some classes. So she's going to be talking about her remote viewing. Otherwise, we're going to have other witnesses. We're going to have Calvin Parker, who was a witness for the Pascagoula incident. But more rare, we're going to have Charlotte Mann,
yes.
who actually was the granddaughter of a priest related to a Cape Girardeau incident. So this is a really famous, actually, alleged crash case. Where this priest says that he was actually called in to do last rites for these dead creatures before they buried them.
Yeah.
So the Woods, who are into crashes, the Ryan and Bob Wood, who are researchers into alleged UFO crashes, this is one of their favorite cases. So you might have read about that in their work. So she's going to come and talk about that case and her work on that. So that's exciting. We'll have Paul Hynek's son. We've got a lot of stuff. This is a real fun one, too. Tui Snyder, another one that you probably haven't seen anywhere else. She's got a great lecture. She's done a lot of research into the Texas airship mystery of 1897. So essentially, there was a UFO flap in 1897, and she's done a lot of research, and she's going to be showing us the news clippings and all about this really exciting case. I've heard really great things about her research.
That's not the one that crashed into the windmill and all that. That's a whole different thing.
No, that's Aurora, Texas.
Yeah, that was proven more or less a hoax, right? That particular one?
Well, yeah, it looks like it was. I mean, I think that there's some pretty good evidence that it was an April Fool's Day joke, essentially, from the newspaper.
Is that right?
Wow. Yeah, but one more I want to add. Of course, we're going to have Kevin Day, who is a radar operator.
Yeah.
But we also just added Chuck Zukowski.
Oh,
I want to plug his television show. He's got a television show, Alien Highway. I mean, he's a buddy. We go back many, many years. But he's got this show, Alien Highway, on a Travel Channel. Karen and I watched it the other day, and they covered Skinwalker. It was a great show, really good show. I'm so happy for him. It's really cool.
That's great.
So UFOCongress.com is where you can go and check that out.
Great. I don't know if I hear your messages chiming through.
Oh, it's Karen's
okay, no problem. No
Facebook,
problem.
And she doesn't know how to turn it off.
All right.
We've got our buddies, Doug of Arizona Shave or Phoenix Shave. He's a good buddy of ours, and he's messaging because he's super excited about Alien Con. So we'll be at Alien Con this weekend. I know Anthony Lapp, the executive producer of Unidentified, who I talked about earlier, he'll be there. Of course, Giorgio with his wild hair will be there because Alien Con is essentially inspired by and partnered with Ancient Aliens. But this is in L.A. So if you're in L.A., I've got like 5 or 6 talks and panels I'm going to be part of. But we're going to have a UFO Congress booth out there as well. So come visit us.
Cool. All right, Alejandro. Thanks so much.
All right. Thank you.
All right. And I'll talk to you next week.
Talk to you later.
All right. Have a good one.
You too.
All right. Bye. Our guest tonight is, his name is Jay Matthews. I try to remember exactly how I found him. I think I saw a blog or something or a comment, and whatever it was, I thought, well, I'm going to have this guy on the show if he'll be on the show. And anyway, he became curious about UFOs at a young age, 14 or so, when he had an encounter. We're going to be talking about that. And he runs a Facebook page. We're going to be talking about that as well. And we will take questions in chat later on, and actually phone calls if you'd like to call in. Jay, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you for having me on.
Yep, you're going to have to just sneak up a little closer to the... there you are. Yes.
Is that any better?
That is better, yes. So, okay. Thanks for staying up late. I know it's late where you're at. And thanks for being on the show. So let's talk about what got you interested in this topic. You started out young, around 14. You actually had an encounter. And I always love hearing encounters that I've never heard before. So fire away, if you would.
Okay. So where I was living in Chester, it's a bit of a hot spot for sightings, but there was one night, literally a month after I'd lost my father, and I moved into my father's bedroom, just for closeness and whatnot. And we had a big bay window at the back of the house in the room that I was in, and I can only describe the light as if when you have a thunderstorm and lightning strikes and it illuminates the whole bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
But I was woken up by this bright light. It literally, like, you know, the police helicopter had a spotlight over my house. So went to the window, didn't have any fear, looked up, and I just saw this absolute blinding light. And opened the window to get a better view, to look beyond the eaves, and I couldn't see a shape. There was no noise. It was just the brightest white light that I can describe. And heard a bang behind me. So being young and kind of jumpy and scaredish, you know, I jumped and literally turned back around, and whatever it was gone. And went downstairs, told my grandmother about this. She was up early hours in the morning. And she kind of, you know, dismissed what I'd seen. I didn't know what I'd seen at that point. And you kind of put it to the back of your mind, and, you know, you get on with your everyday life. But several years later, I had a friend that lived literally about 2 streets away. And, you know, UFOs back then, it wasn't something you talked about at school with your friends. And being my best friend, he was the only one that I'd really sort of confided in about what I'd seen, because it was weird. And I think it was a year, maybe 2 years later, he came to me and he said, that night that you saw that light, I saw this huge triangular ship object that was over your house at low descent. He said it was noiseless. And you know, that was kind of enough confirmation for me. But
wow,
that, yeah, it cured my interest. And obviously there was no internet back then.
About what year would you say that was?
I would say that was, it'd have been about 1994, because I was born in 1980, so it was when I was 14. So good time away. But it literally every night after that, you know, I think I borrowed the neighbor's binoculars, and I'd stay up looking out the windows and just curious to see, you know, if whatever it was that I did see would reappear at some point. You know, curiosity got me, so to say.
Now, when you talked to your friend, did he say that he could actually see the outline of the craft? Were there lights, or how did he know that it was actually a triangle?
Yeah, he said he could see a shape. There was a light emanating from the bottom that was literally over the house.
Wow.
So,
like illuminating your whole house?
Yeah, yeah, literally. I asked the neighbors thereafter if they saw anything. And he even sort of, you know, to rationalize the conversation, said, you know, was the police helicopter out last night? You know, were they searching for someone that was lost? Whether the neighbors saw anything or not, I still don't know to this day. But to have a friend come back to me and say, you know, he saw something. And this, again, this was way before the stuff with the TR-3B was out there.
Oh, yeah.
It was way before YouTube and, you know, the internet. So,
yeah,
you know, that was huge.
Yeah, internet was in the infancy back then. And so, and what did that do for you? Did that spark your interest right away, or did it take a while before you started looking into it?
Yeah, it took a while. Initially, it scared me.
Did you think you were being like chosen, or, you know, I mean, like searched after? I mean, why was it over your house type of thing and not someone else's? Is that one of some of the things going through your mind?
Yeah, yeah. There was a lot of fear. And at the time, X-Files was big on television.
Oh, yeah.
you know, that just sort of hit the UK and, you know, you start watching that, you know, your mind overthinks, and you kind of add two and two and come up with ten.
Right, right. We are actually right at the first break right now, so we're going to head right into a break, so hang in there. All right, everyone, this is Martin Willis. My guest from the UK is Jay Matthews. All right, so Jay, we're still live on YouTube. And I'm going to just jump over quickly, see if there's any questions. But can you, right now, before I look to see if there's any questions, can you tell us where exactly in the UK do you live?
At the moment, I live in North Wales. Literally, Chester and Buckley, where I live, is right on the border. So I literally live just over the English border in enemy territory, as the Welsh would say.
Now, I've talked to other people from the UK, and they said there's not a lot of sightings in general there because of the weather. You know, I mean, is that so, or do you get a lot of reports?
Yeah, yeah, we do. Literally, just speaking to the guys from Swansea UFO Network, they were up here at the weekend, and to my surprise, they've actually interviewed a couple of key witnesses that have seen things. I believe so. One is ex-military that is local to me. So, you know, I like to think that I'm the only crackpot around here. But, you know, it's reassuring when you hear other people telling their story.
One of the things I wanted to do is talk to you about UFO cases, and just wanted to, you know, in the UK, basically, because there's you know, there's some good ones. What about Warminster? How far away are you from there?
It's probably It's probably about a good 300 miles away from where I live.
Now, do you hear a lot of, I mean, do you follow a lot of the UK cases over the years, like the Warminster? What do they call it?
Yeah.
That had a nickname, the Warminster something. Thing. It was called the Thing.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, there's a good friend of mine, Steve Wills, a really good researcher from down that way. I follow his work. They've actually, you know, it seems to be quite a hot spot for sightings.
Yeah.
There's been some really good documented cases down there. But saying that, you know, where I am in Wales, there's a lot of ancient sites.
Yeah.
There's a lot of ley lines around, which is something I've done a bit of research into. And, you know, literally every clear night I'm out the back, we have low light pollution. I actually overlook a mountain. I say mountain, it's a hill shy 80 feet of being a mountain called Molvamai, which has actually been... it's been the location for a lot of sightings recently, or at least since I've moved into this area. Mm-hmm. You know, weird orbs, there's been weird lights. There's a chap called Graham Evans who lives in Denby, which is literally 8 to 10 miles away. He's got some incredible footage over the mountain ranges over there. So, mm-hmm. I'd say the area as a whole is very active at the moment, and probably has been since before I started doing this.
We're going to be going back here in just about 20 seconds. All right, welcome back. This is Martin Willis. My guest is Jay Matthews from over in North Wales, and welcome back to the show. So we were talking during the break, we were talking geographically where you're located. I know just before the break, we weren't talking about that at all. And I usually write it down what we're talking about. I think we were talking about the triangle, you know, over your house and all that. But location-wise, that's where we were talking about during the break. So it looks to me on the map that you're in North Wales. Anywhere near the Snowdonia National Park?
Yeah, literally, I'd say as the crow flies, about 50 miles away.
Yep, yep. So my family's from Wales. I've never been there, but I planned it. It's on my bucket list, so to speak. I got to get out there. But anyway, so it looks like you're, in that case, it looks like you're about 300 miles or so also from the Rendlesham Forest area. Is that a case that you have ever... inspired
it
you
is.
Looked into?
Yeah. Uh-huh. In fact, it's probably one of the first, I'd say along with the Berwyn UFO incident, it was probably one of the first documented cases that I looked into. Obviously, because there's so much evidence surrounding that case. And it's actually still ongoing now with, I believe there's a new documentary coming out soon, which is... going to shed some light on the situation. But you know, obviously Rendlesham, I think, happened in 1980, which was the year I was born. The Berwyn UFO crash happened in 74, which is literally a stone's throw away from where I live now. So when you start out, you know, obviously reading books back then, you had the main cases, you had your Roswells, you know, some of the more mainstream UFO sightings or incidents, if you will.
Oh, sure.
You know, you start reading about these other cases, which, you know, have been publicised but maybe not talked about in the same sort of way as, you know, your Roswells and whatnot. But... you just go deeper and deeper down the rabbit hole. The Rendlesham thing, I don't think it was the lighthouse. I know that's been reported and it's out there. I've also got friends that have been to the forest there. And again, looking into the ley lines thing, there's ley lines that actually run straight through Rendlesham. And there's still activity going on to this day.
Oh, yes. Yeah, a lot of people are talking about that. There's a lot of weird things going on there, not just UFOs. You know, people are talking about entities and everything else. Someone just banter just posted in the chat room that if you look at the unidentified latest episodes, they have a chart where they pinned hotspots, and one of them is in North Wales. So they consider that a hotspot up there where you're at.
That's reassuring.
We can talk a little bit about. Have you watched any of those shows? Oh, they're not over there, are they? In the UK.
They're not as yet on History UK, but I happen to have seen the first three episodes, which have been put up on various websites. But it's interesting stuff. I was really excited with the whole TTSA announcement.
Yep.
I know currently there's some documents to suggest that Elizondo wasn't in charge of ATIP, but that doesn't, for me, doesn't take away the fact that those three videos were confirmed to be DOD.
Yeah, and we don't know for sure, you know, as far as the documents go, and I know what you're talking about, and as far as, you know, the research that John Greenwald has been doing and the communication he's been getting, you know, right from the Pentagon spokesperson, we don't know 100% sure. There's no way of telling if this person either does or does not know for sure, or, you know, may find out later. It's possible. So I wouldn't give 100% for sure either way. You know, I had Lou Elizondo on this show on a YouTube stream as well. And that went out to the podcast, my supporters podcast.
Okay.
But I did want to say, you know, I met Lou in person and I talked to him. He's very, very a cool guy. You just got to say, when you meet him, you say, this guy's just a plain cool guy. He's very interesting. And, you know, I'm in the fine arts and antiques, and I started talking to him about, he asked me, you know, what I did for my real job type of thing. And so it was like I opened up a door because he and I were talking about, he was asking me about things that he collects, and he was telling me all these great things that he collects. He's quite a collector. And so I started thinking about this whole thing. And, you know, I'm trying not to be conspiratorial in any type of way. I always try to look at things level-headed. But I was thinking the other day, I was driving somewhere, and I was just thinking, you know, if there was someone that the government would want to muddy the water with, you know, put some disinformation out there, it would be a guy just like him. Someone that's gets along with everyone. Everyone wants to talk to him. He's really great. Now, I'm not saying that is the situation at all. I'm just saying that he would be the type of person, as he is so believable and gets along so well with just about anyone he talks with, he would be exactly the type of person that would be out there giving misinformation. And I'm not saying that's what's happening at all. I think only time will tell. I like John Greenwald a lot. He's a great guy. I think he's trying to figure out what's going on. But I also think that it's very possible that Elizondo is 100% legit. He really, I'm telling you, makes you feel that way when you talk to him. And there's a lot of things that point in that direction. So do I dare say that I'm on the fence about it? I guess that's as close as I can get to, you know, everything I just said. It's just my thoughts on the whole topic. I really don't know. And I think time will tell, you know, and the UFO community has been fooled before. You know, there's Bill Moore, there's Richard Doty, there's a lot of different examples. And by the way, Richard Doty is coming up in August on this show at some point, some day. And I'm not sure if you ever heard of the Benowitz case and all that and who Richard Doty is.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So anyway, I'm sorry I went on quite a ramble there, but what is your general thought? Are you just as well kind of looking at everything people are posting. It's a very active situation where people have an opinion on this subject, that's for sure. TTSA, yeah, all that.
Yeah, I saw a tweet that DeLong put out the other day about an episode of Unidentified where he supposedly got intel from Italy about a UFO zap and a helicopter out
yes,
the sky.
I saw that too. Yeah.
Yeah, that was interesting. Now, you know, the conspiracy-minded people will say, you know, it's the evil aliens agenda. You know, they're lobbying for funding maybe for more weapons, what with Trump's Space Force, you know, being talked about. But I think we've all got to see how it plays out. My feeling on Elizondo is if he is lying, and say John Greenwald is right, then surely Chris Mellon would be lying. All these guys like Hal Puthoff, Steve Justice, that are all involved with him, you wouldn't get into bed with someone who's necessarily trying to pull the wool over your eyes. Now, I think...
That's a very good point. Yeah,
yeah, and also Grant Cameron is a fantastic researcher that I follow. And when he's, obviously, he's very into the presidential UFO stuff, but he talks about this plausible deniability where you put a story out and you put some facts in it, you put some lies in it, and most of the time, if this thing goes too far, it's like a baby on reins. You have those reins to rein that child back in. And from my own understanding and what I've seen, I think there are people in the US government that want this out. And I also think there are people that, I don't know for what reasons, still want to cover this up. So perhaps that's a reason for, you know, all this stuff with Elizondo, because I saw a clip, I think it was on CNN in America, where I think the guy on the news asked him about a recovered spacecraft.
Right.
And he seemed to say yes, but he was bound by his secrecy agreement and he couldn't go any further in discussing that.
Well, he basically said yes without saying yes.
Yeah, yeah, he did.
That's what I saw.
which I thought was a huge statement.
Yes, yeah, and that is shocking. Alejandro, who was just on with the news ahead of time, thought that was the most shocking part of the interview that he did with him. He sort of answered him the same way, you know, like, you know, not really a denial, and you know, you can gather what you want from it, but it's almost a way of saying yes without saying yes.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
You know, it's interesting, you know, like many back in December of 2017 when their story broke.
Yeah.
And we had the New York Times Post. You know, obviously for guys like myself, that research this, the ridicule you face, the way the UFO subject is perceived by a lot of these media agencies literally changed overnight.
It really has.
It was crazy from a UK point of view to see, you know, BBC, ITV, Sky News all reporting this in a serious way. And not kind of with a smirk on their face as they're reading this out.
Or the or the music, you know, the scary music in the background.
Or the
X-Files music.
Yeah.
You know, I received an email recently from someone from the UK, and they were saying that the UK, the UFO topic in the UK, I don't know exactly where. I'm going to try to pull it up, you know, perhaps when we go to our next break. But they were just basically saying that the UFO topic in wherever they are in the UK right now is poison. They can't talk about it. There's death threats and everything else. It was a crazy email, but it was actually from a known person in the UFO field. So I was kind of shocked to actually see that. Do you see any of that? Or, again, you know, you're talking about the more credible reports on the news and stuff like that. Are you seeing a shift in where you're at as well?
Yeah, I've seen a lot of this on social media. Literally, within the last 2 years, the way some of my friends that I surmise are very good researchers have been attacked, and almost in a witch hunt kind of way, is crazy. And these people are my seniors. These are people who have been doing this far longer than what I have. And I don't know if it's a distraction or it's to distract from all the stuff that is actually going on that is credible in the UK. Or, you know, there's a few bad apples and, yeah. You know, it's crazy. But, yeah, I see that a lot, and it's draining. Especially when you're, as you just said, you know, I try and sit on the fence. I don't try and pick a side. You look at the fact, you look at what is put out there, and you've got a group of friends that are for this, and then you've got a group of friends that are against this. Yeah. And you're kind of caught in the middle. And it's almost, I've had the situation where I've been forced to pick a side. And because I refuse to pick a side, I'm then deemed as bad as the person. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, so, it's a. I see the divide. You know, I see, as you mentioned, I see the divide on the social media, the rants and stuff like that. And I just decided not to really get into it. I just glance now and then, but I'm not going to get into any of the debates, any of that part of it. But it's definitely a divide. It seems like. You know, we're divided in politics here in the U.S., and there's a divide now in the UFO field. And and as far as the TTSA, you know, there's also a lot of opinions out there about that that are, you know, kind of conspiratorial, you know, like it's a whole government thing. I've heard that before. I've heard a lot of people talk about that. And I don't know. I can't say. It definitely is, but you make a really good point about would Chris Mellon, would Hal Puthoff and all these other, Steve Justice and all this, get into bed with, you know, something that was deviant, and I don't think so, yeah.
Especially, you know, especially given Chris Mellon's credentials,
yeah.
You know, it's his family's deep-rooted in America, obviously in the oil business and what else, and obviously his position. Yeah. In government. So it when you start adding these things together, it doesn't make a great deal of sense. I think from my personal opinion, I don't think they're playing to the rules. Perhaps they're going, you know, running against stream at the moment, TTSA. I'm mentioning perhaps some things that they shouldn't. Mm-hmm. You know, we all know about these alloys and recovered metamaterials, which have allegedly gone to Bigelow Aerospace. You know, I find that deeply interesting, especially with the release, obviously, of the Skinwalker film, which came out towards the end of last year.
Well, you know, Skinwalker supposedly is, you know, the whole genesis for any of this happening. You know, which is right from the very beginning. You know, you talked about Tom DeLonge's tweet just a minute ago about the helicopter shooting down an UFO, or the other way around, the UFO shooting down a helicopter. I can't remember what it is.
Yeah.
But anyway, I think what's really interesting about the tweet is he took it down after. And I don't know why he took it down, but I would guess, if I had to guess, I would say that it's probably the History Channel told them to take it down, because they're really being very guarded on every episode before it's released. So I imagine that's probably what happened. But just the fact that he put it up and then he took it down, I think that's interesting.
Yeah. Obviously now you've got screen captures and screenshots. So
Right. I have it somewhere.
It's out there. Yeah. Me too.
Yeah.
Me too.
You know, you talked about Chris Mellon now. He was on the show. He was interviewed by Leslie Kane, I immediately called Leslie and said, hey, any way I can get Chris on the show? He agreed, and I actually had him on the show. It's a very rare interview. He's you can check him out on my YouTube channel. So I had a really nice and interesting interview with him, and then I told him, he asked me if I thought there was any other show, and I said, you know, you want to get on Coast to Coast? I know George Knapp. And so I connected them two. He went on Coast to Coast. So those were the only two interviews he had done for a long time, and now he's on, you know, mainstream interviews at this point.
Yeah.
But what I find really interesting, I have never said this on this show at all, but I find it very interesting that Chris had been in touch. We were emailing and talking a bit after the interview. And then as soon as he joined To the Stars, he never communicated with me again. He's never returned an email. I think it's strange. I have no idea exactly why. You know, and it's perhaps the publicist for TTSA, for To the Stars Academy of Science. I just don't know if that's the deal. And I know that it's, I can't remember her name, begins with a K. It's actually Tom DeLonge's sister's running the publicity.
Okay.
So it's not Karen, it's something like that, but Kara or... go ahead.
Didn't the same thing happen on Fade to Black with Jimmy Church? I remember, I forget who he was interviewing, but he seemed to say on this interview that he'd reached out to TTSA and Tom DeLonge and Elizondo, and they said that it wasn't the right time for them to come back on the show.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, you know, obviously there was the bad interview on the Joe Rogan podcast.
Oh, yes. That was a mistake.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that was a huge mistake. I, you know, I actually know Joe Rogan, and
oh wow, yeah,
yeah, he's an out there guy. But I personally, I think he'd already sort of made his mind up to pick holes in what Tom was saying beforehand. Yeah. But then Tom didn't do himself any favors with some of the footage he was showing them. It just wasn't it didn't do TTSA a lot of favors.
Yes. Yeah, I agree. And another thing, that this is something also I've never said before either, but just reflecting on the TTSA since they've been active, is going back to the publicists, I don't think I think a lot of the conspiracies are born from being kind of elusive or not available and all that, and people are just questioning that. And when the government does something like that, you know, then we say there's aliens, you know, so yeah. Conspiracy yeah. always happens. But I'm not saying that she's not doing a good job, but, you know, perhaps instead of Tom DeLonge's sister being a publicist, maybe it would have been or still could be a better idea to get a publicist in there that has dealt with sensitive issues and has experience in this, you know, just plain experience, but experience in this type of situation. And perhaps they could have a little bit better of a public image. Maybe they don't want one. I don't know what their situation is.
The only thing that I find strange about the whole TTSA thing, and it was listening to Fade to Black with Jimmy Church, where Tom DeLonge mentioned that he was authoring the autobiography of Bob Lazar. Now, obviously, with Jeremy Corbell's film coming out, you know, Bob Lazar and Flying Saucers at Area 51, I perhaps it's still yet to come, but it's almost like with the 2004 Nimitz film, that's when they're acknowledging UFOs kind of exist. And kind of dismissing, obviously, you know, decades and decades of sightings before. So, as pertains to the metamaterial that is alleged that is at Bigelow Aerospace, how does that fit in with, obviously, Bob Lazar and the reverse engineering, obviously, at S4?
Yeah, I've talked many times, and I get email every time I do about this, is... Bob Lazar is another one I'm on the fence about.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, it's a tricky one. And
it is. It is.
And just when, if someone, well, to use the, I don't know if I should say the word lie, but if someone is just, well, doesn't tell exactly the truth about one thing, does it mean that their whole story is bogus? That's, I exactly. guess, something to think about. And I don't know. I don't know.
The thing I found interesting with the Bob Lazar was, I think it was George Knapp that brought it up, that he was facing a felony for his involvement in setting up a brothel.
Yes.
In America. Yeah. And how, you know, the prosecution couldn't do the background checks on him. And they were kind of peed off of him. And he was looking at doing some time, you know, in prison. And his story didn't change. And for me, that would be the point where you'd find holes in the story. So,
I see what you're saying. Interesting.
Yeah. You know, that would be the time that you kind of come clean, you know. I'm just putting it out there.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's interesting. I'd never, another thing that I had never actually thought of, and a very good point. That's it for the free part of the show. Thank you so much for listening. And we'll be back next week with Nick Redfern. He's going to be talking about Kremlin and UFOs. Pretty interesting topic. It's his new book that is just came out. I want to thank everyone that helped out with this show. That includes people behind the scenes, but also our guest and Alejandro Rojas for the UFO updates, Peggy for the Facebook page. If you would like to support the show and listen to the full shows, all you have to do is go over to podcastufo.com and you can see the menu there to support the show. As low as $2 a month, could also do a once a year payment too. That's all through pay subscription system that is set up right there. It's all secure. The website is totally secure. Anyway, again, we'll be back next week. And remember to keep your eyes to the sky.